Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I hit 606 up in my senior year. That's not a lot of failure. You go straight to pro ball, you start failing a lot. You're 0 for 10. How do you know to do something you've never done? You don't.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Banduho. Today we're talking to Darno McDonald, former big league outfielder and recently announced pre- and post-game analyst for Red Sox baseball on NESN. Extremely talented guy on and off the field with a unique career story which I was excited to dive into. We talked his being a multi-sport phenom in high school. Signed to be the heir to Ricky Williams at Texas, he instead signed with the Orioles as their first-round pick. Life in the minors wasn't easy on or off the field for Darno. He talks a lot about learning to improve the mental side of things, the approach to that side of the game, which makes sense as he was the mental skills coach for the Cubs' 2016 World Series team. We talk about his career in the minors, why he loved playing for the Red Sox later in his career, and what every ball player needs to do during his career to prepare for life after that playing career. Was very grateful for Darno for taking the time. Really enjoyed this conversation. Hope everyone enjoys it as well. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. College baseball starts this week. Division I college baseball starts this week. Division II started last week. BA's got all the coverage there. Got the top 200 draft prospects out. Team top 10s are out. A lot of good stuff. Always a good time to be a subscriber of Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Darno McDonald. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was the 26th overall pick in the 97 draft out of Cherry Creek High School, former big league outfielder Darno McDonald. Darno, thank you so much for joining From Phenom to the Farm.
Thanks for having me.
I've got to ask before we get into your career story, what does the chief of morale at SVA Sports do?
The chief of morale changes your physiology, meaning I always say, like, the first step to being being a winning team is just feeling good, getting as many people as possible, showing up, feeling good. Because if you feel good, you're probably going to do good work or set yourself up for doing good work, right? You know what I'm saying?
Look good, play good.
So that's what the chief morale does. Helps people feel good, tap into their best self physiologically.
Well, we'll over the course of this podcast, I think we'll tap into how much that matters and in a variety of places in your career. Let's talk high school, where you have to, I would imagine, on the field, off the field, had been feeling pretty good about yourself. In the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony from last year, the guy interviewing you referred to you as the Bo Jackson of Colorado. how did you split your time between baseball and football as you got into high school, started getting big collegiate attention in football, pro and collegiate attention in baseball? How did you kind of decide where your future was going to lie?
Number one, just having fun. Really having no expectation. I knew I wanted to pursue both sports as long as possible. That was like the number one thing. Like, I had so much fun. I look back at my high school career, it was probably the most fun time of my life. And kind of looking at high school sports now, where some kids don't even play high school sports, you know, they go straight to travel ball circuit. And I'm like, man, I don't know what I would do without having that experience of playing high school with my boys, no responsibility, but playing sports, having fun, winning championships. When it got time to, it was actually 2 days before I was getting ready to leave for two-a-days. and thinking, this is really getting real, right? Like, I might, because when in 94, I saw Matt Brunson, a family friend, he signed with the Detroit Tigers in 94 in the first round. And I remember being at their house, the Brunson's house, when that happened, and setting my intention then. I was like, I'm going to do that. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to draft in baseball. I'm going to play. And so from that day, I kind of had my mindset on doing it. And then 2 days before leaving for college and writing those entrance exams, those essays, like, yeah, you got to do those also, right? You got to write those essays. So anyway, I ended up signing, obviously, with the Orioles, and the rest is history.
Was that a difficult decision for you? Because you got, at that time, $1.9 million was the biggest bonus the Orioles had given out to a high school player. But the difference with playing like baseball and football in college, like football season was staring you in the face. Like that fall, you would have had Texas football to go play the big stadium in Austin. Was it a difficult decision for you? Or when the money was there, was it easy to say, okay, I'm good hanging up these pads?
Yes and no. Like I said, I knew in 94 I wanted to sign. I didn't come from, a lot of money. And that was kind of my motivation at the time, being, 18 years old. And I want, money. I want money. But I also, from the jump, I was like, it's going to be, you can't lose, right? It's a win-win decision. Either going to play two sports at the University of Texas or obviously signing to play baseball. I've no regrets. And actually when I signed, I went back to the University of Texas to let them know that I was signing. I was going to play baseball. The football team was getting ready to go out for practice. These guys come by and like, you Darnell McDonald. They're talking for a little bit saying, I'm gonna go play baseball, I'm not gonna be coming here. And they look at me and they go, good, we want to piece your ass. I'm gone. I'll see you guys. I'll be watching you on TV. But football is a different beast, different mindset. Yeah.
You would have been in a battle in that backfield too, if I'm getting the timing of that right.
Ricky Williams was there, and he was actually my host when I went to the University of Texas, and just seeing the atmosphere at University of Texas, 6th Street. I don't think I left 6th Street for 2 days, but that's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in that type of atmosphere, 75,000 fans, burnt orange. I love the simplicity of the uniforms, but I'm going to replace Ricky Williams. One of the best ever. This guy's he's a god in Austin.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have an older brother who was in the higher levels of baseball in the minors of that. What kind of idea did you have from him, or just in general, about what the minor leagues are actually about when you signed that contract?
He was with the Yankees. He was with my brother Donzo. He came up with the Yankees, and the Yankees at that time, they did a really good job of taking care of their minor leaguers. The Yankees had that Adidas deal. All their players got the Adidas equipment and shoes, and they put them up in the hotel. I'm pretty sure my brother, he didn't have to worry about it. He had to pay for that. They put them up, they took care of them. And that's not how everywhere was. My first experience in pro ball was instructional league, Tiger Town, sharing a complex and being in a dorm with another roommate. So it was kind of a different experience than his. We never really talked about that part of it. I'm just like, he's playing pro ball. You think pro ball is like the best of everything. It's sort of like the fans, they don't understand. Or like when you're in the PCL and you're on one of those early flights, and what's really humbling is the person next to you is like, so when are you gonna go pro? I'm like, I'm pro now, but it's not pro, the TV pro, yeah.
You can tell that. I mean, you tell that person on the plane, like, you don't even know how bad it was a few years before when we were on the bus rides. Once you make it to the PCL, those early flights, that's close. That's a lot closer. With that, before you got down to Instructs, especially growing up in Colorado, which is, it state produces a lot of athletes, but it's not a Florida, California, Texas. How often did you step into the box or be in the backfield and feel like you were challenged athletically, or at least up against someone, a pitcher, a linebacker, anyone who was kind of your status athletically? I know in the 95 state title game, you faced off against Roy Halladay. So I'd imagine that was a challenge. He was a high draft pick out of high school. But how often were you facing guys who were in the same talent stratosphere as you before you got into pro ball?
Colorado surprised you. You just said Roy Halladay.
I mean, Colorado produces good athletes. I'm not knocking Colorado. It's not like an island in the middle. But I'm just even then, you mentioned that there wasn't but you mentioned there wasn't a lot of travel ball and things like that. When you're strictly kind of sticking around, there are very few. It just in general, there are very few athletes of your talent status every year nationwide. And then the next year they consolidate in either professional baseball, Division I football, or Division I baseball. And that's when you first see all those. So how often were you sticking up against someone who could challenge you in that way?
I think baseball is different, right? As far as like pitching, you're not going to face 95 every day. You're not going to face 95 coming out of bullpen, these relievers. Football, playing, post game, he played in the NFL, he went to Mullen. There were some guys that went on to play D1 back then, different schools. But baseball is sort of like a different beast. I was lucky, like in the summer, we didn't have, it wasn't travel ball, it was County Mac. And, we'd go on like 3 or 4 trips a year, different places playing teams from, all over the country. Wasn't Little League World Series, but we went to the World Series. We played the Dominican, Puerto Rico. This is when I was like 9, 10 years old. So I did have exposure to other areas, different talent levels. And my mindset back then was I don't want to be the best in the state of Colorado. I want to be the best everywhere. Like I was growing up watching, you look at Baseball Americas and things like this. I want to be the best.
I mean, that's the move. So you get into it, like your post career has been a lot of focus on the mental side of baseball. You were a mental skills coach for the Cubs. A lot of what you talk about and do now is focused on that side of the game. How in tune were you with the importance of the mental side of the game, mental skills, when you were 19, 20, 21 years old? Your entire early journey through the minors, like how in tune were you with that side of baseball?
You hear what I said back then? I want to be the best. I was always focused on the best. What's the best? You get to pro ball and you realize everyone's good, right? Everyone's good. Not only that, it's a long season, it's a marathon. And then you realize, in high school, I hit 606, I think, my senior year. That's not a lot of failure. You go straight to pro ball, you start failing a lot. You're 0 for 10. How do you know to do something you've never done? You don't. And you start realizing how hard baseball is. You're playing a game of failure. And the most important thing is how you deal with that failure. And so I didn't have a mental skills coach, and getting drafted first round, going to pro ball, no mental skills coach. I didn't have a nutritionist. I didn't have, they actually told me when I signed, don't lift weights. Don't lift weights, it's bad for baseball. You shouldn't do that. Obviously, we know now that every team from top to bottom has a strength and conditioning coach. Same thing with the mental side of the game. Every team pretty much has a mental skills coach or a mental skills program. They understand the importance of this. And I know when I was with the Cubs and we developed our program in 2013. We have people like Joe Maddon who like believe this is a competitive advantage, right? Believe in it so much that we, you know, can revisit. We had mental skills coaches at pretty much every level. It's a separator, it's a game changer. And I wish that I would have understood then that I can develop the mental side just as much as develop the physical side, learn how to swing a bat, hit that slider, throw the ball down in a way where you do the same thing with your mind.
On the physical side, as you're coming up in the system, you're a first round pick. So obviously you're going to have the attention of a lot of people just in the organization. Hey, we've got to make good on this guy. He's this toolsy athlete. You know, he's a two sport guy. So there's a little catch up there. As you're going up the ladder through the different levels, through instructs, through spring training, and you're kind of like the apple of the eye of the organization, like they want to make something out of you. How much in your ear, how much different input from different people? Like, does it come from every direction? Like, how do you focus on this is what I actually need to be working on? When I'd imagine that every roving hitting instructor or coach at spring training has a tip for you or things like how do you process information, especially at 20, when I think every 20-year-old kid just wants to please everyone.
Right. And yeah, you don't, man. Like, you start listening to everyone, get what even got you there. This is when I first started to understand the business side of it, is like all those guys that you're talking that drafted me, that believed in me, I don't know, after my second or third year, they were gone, right? And when I was with the Orioles, I was there with high school, you have 6 years. You know, they had the rights for 6 years. I think four of those 6 years, we had a different GM, different manager. Okay, so each time someone comes in there, right, they have their guys that they're hanging their hat on, that they drafted. And so it was kind of like, you have the guys that drafted you, they believe in you, but yeah, I didn't. Those guys were gone. So I had to prove myself all over again. Man, talk about struggle. Like, talk about... you know, the mental game. My second year of pro ball, my mother passed away, and she was the closest thing to a mental skills coach that I had. And I'll never forget, you know, she passed away in the off season. I went into the season and, you know, it didn't hit me until like I was probably 0-5, might have been 0-10. Right. And that's when I called my mom, she pumped me up and we can do it, this and this. And I couldn't do that. And that's when that her death, like everything became real. And I was in Bowie, Maryland. I remember the Orioles, you know, they were actually going to let me go home for the season. I'm like, you know, I'm not going home and finish it out. But at the same time, you don't realize you're getting scouted. They're scouting every game. They're writing these reports on you. And they don't know that your mother passed away. They don't, you know what's going on in your life. They're just writing a report. And again, looking back, this is the understanding the business side of professional sports. When you're a pro, right? The fans that come, they expect a show. I paid this all this money to see you play, but, you know, and so being able to compartmentalize, right? This is something that took me a long time to learn, to develop that skill.
And as you get into the higher levels of the minor leagues, you know, start growing in your body, start, you know, learning the game, you're 23, 24. You know, you'd said when you signed, you wanted to be the best in the world. At, you know, at that time, I think that's when Griffey's still the best or someone like that. When you get into the higher levels of the minor leagues, and you're 23, 24, playing in Ottawa, playing in Rochester. How do you keep high aspirations? Like, of I want to be the best of the best, but also develop a realistic profile for yourself. Like, what kind of big leaguer did you want to be at that point? What did you think your game was? Like, was there someone who you're like, I can be this guy in the minor, in, you know, in the big leagues? Or is there still, do you still have to have that, I want to be Griffey in order to be successful?
I think this is the most important part of development right here, what we're talking about. And I went through, I grew up wanting to be Gary Sheffield. At the time, I wanted to be Albert Pujols. I wanted to be whoever was doing well at that time. I say the biggest part of development is like understanding yourself, like what you do well, and you know, continuing to develop that skill or those skills. And there's so many times where, man, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't, you know, I didn't have that same belief. I said, I wanted to be the best. I came up during the steroid era, right? And I tell people, man, there's only two times in my career that I felt pressure. And that was one of them. Come up with steroid era and you're getting passed up. My guys that like, man, you know, I know, like, I'm a better athlete, I'm a better player than this guy, but you're getting passed up, right? And the pressure to get bigger, faster, stronger, and not compete on milk and cookies, like, this is a real thing. So that was pressure for me, the steroid era, and still being able to, you know, your first round pick, there's a lot of expectations. You know, you're supposed to be this guy. Where is this guy? And then when I had my first daughter, my first child, my daughter, and I'd gotten released, and they didn't have NIL deals in college. I couldn't go back to school, and, you know, they weren't putting food on the table for my kid. So those are two times that I felt that pressure in baseball. That's why the mental side, the self-awareness side, is the most important. Awareness is a skill, and I say the most important skill, because the faster that you know yourself and what you do, and I tell many stories about people that made a lot of money in the game just knowing what they do well, right? And being ready. You see guys, I played with Marco Scudero. A lot of people don't know who Marco Scudero is, unless you're Venezuela. He's a legend over there. But filled the ball, controlled the barrel, and played a long time in the show, made a lot of money, and just did his thing.
What did you need to hear at like 24 years old, right as you're about to break into the big leagues? Obviously, if you could, you know, we'd all tell our younger self something in hindsight, but like, what did you do well? What were those skills you needed to focus on that maybe you didn't at the time or didn't? Like, what, you know, if you could take that guy aside and say, this is what you do well, this will give you longevity in the big leagues. Because like, you found big league success 6-7 years after you originally broke in. So what did that younger version need to hear?
I'm going to tell you right now. It was, I think after my 6th year, I was a free agent. I'd been taken off the roster, and my mentor coming up, Ellis Burks. Ellis Burks, he was with the Indians.
A great one.
Yeah, the best, EB. So EB says, hey, I want to tell you what the reports we got on you over here. And it was like, you know, didn't play hard. You know, lackadaisical, all these things. Like, I've never, like, now this ain't associated with me. I remember that day, I was like, no one will ever say anything like this about me again. So that lit a fire under me. And then the other turning point for me was I'm in the minor leagues, killing it, crushing it. Like, I'm putting up numbers. You look at 05, when my daughter was born in 05, I got released. I went over to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Durham, North Carolina. Finished the season strong there. It was really it was transformational for me being there. I went back the next year. I led the league in hits. Didn't get called up. Following year, same thing. I'm putting up these numbers. I'm not getting called up. So I... again, the compartmentalization. I started saying, I like these small wins. Okay, if I'm playing right field, I'm going to be better than that right fielder. I got to, so when I get to the Red Sox, which is, for me, was kind of like my welcome to the big leagues moment. Is when I say that because that's when I really felt like a big leaguer. You know, I made the opening day roster in 09, the year before. I was like a deer in headlights. I was scared to death.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following year, I was like, when I was with the Red Sox, I was like, I belong here. It's when I played my best. But I played my best when I said, you know what? I'm not getting called up. I'm putting these numbers up. I'm not getting called up. Okay. So now I'm going to focus on doing all the little things. I'm going to focus on, like, man, dirt ball reads, moving up extra base. I'm going to focus on, you know, the defense, hitting the cutoff, man, all the little stuff that doesn't show up in box scores. And when I did that, I found myself in playing for the Red Sox and playing for a winning organization and a team where they didn't need anymore. They had superstars. They didn't need Chiefs. So the chief officer morale, like, how can I make someone else better? How can I make David Ortiz better? You know, we had our lockers right next to each other. You feel good, you're going to play good, man. How can I, you know, see what I'm saying? So this is the chief officer morale. And that, I think that comes along with maturity. And they didn't give me a blueprint for that when I signed. It's kind of funny because, now, yeah.
You had to find that all yourself.
Well, it's crazy because, okay, you sign, you go to the minor leagues, and it's not necessarily, I come from like winning. I was used to winning. And the win, it's a team game. You go to the minor leagues, huh? It's not necessarily a team game, right? I'm going to get mine so I can get to the show. I didn't understand that mindset, right? And then you develop that mindset of getting mine, and you go to the big leagues where then some teams want to win, and you got to turn off that mindset. And, you know, it's tough, right? So I went to the Red Sox. I'd gone through just so many different things that I was at the point of my career where I was really practicing gratitude. I'm happy to be here. I'd already been released, all these things that happened to me. Like, I'm playing with house money, and it was actually the best that I played in my career was there.
How vividly do you remember that first game, the night game with Boston?
That's like every single detail from, not many people know the story about, I almost missed my flight to the big leagues. I almost missed my call up to the big leagues with the Sox in Rochester, New York. Luckily, our trainer, John Joe Kim, calls me, like, you know, yeah, up. Or, you know, if it wasn't for him, I might not have made it. But when I got called up, I actually, it was like a call up, but it wasn't a call up. It was kind of cool how it happened because they called up or like, we got to wait and see if, you know, these guys can go, if we're going to put them on the list. So, you know, we went to, it was Reddick and I, Josh Reddick, we went up together. He gets called over first to the field. We're at the hotel waiting. He gets called over first. And I remember just thinking in my head, like, better get called. Like, I'm not going back. I'm not getting on a plane going back. So, like, I'm calling myself up no matter what. And, you know, it's like 6 o'clock, game 7:05 game. And I, okay, come over the field, we're calling, we're activating it. And we're walking through the door, and, you know, the clubbies are on it. You know, Pookie, Pookie's like, yo, you know, what number do you want? Because they change it on the spot. They'll make you a uniform like in 5 minutes, right in the back of the clubhouse. Like, here you go. I was like, man, I don't care. Just give me the number in spring training. It's 54. And, no batting practice, none of that stuff. Like, that we get trained to think, like, I need this batting practice, or I'm not going to play well. I need to go, like, this routine. Like, no, you don't have an opportunity to do that. Go straight to the game. And I remember, it was like the eighth inning, obviously, beginning of the eighth inning. What good managers, good leaders do, right? They kind of prepare you for things that might happen down the road. So Tito comes over. He's like, all right, if so-and-so gets on, you're going to pitch it for, might have been Verite. Well, so-and-so got on, and Mac, come back. Oh, this is really happening. Holy cow. And again, the rest is history.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing some, my research before then, like, that's a game that I remember, because that being a big story, you being a minor league journeyman, and you have this debut with the Sox with a home run, the walk-off single, the long single off the monster, and it being a story that you then stuck with the Sox and you had a good year. With that, you go from, you said in 09, you make the opening day roster with the Reds, but you're a deer in the headlights. What, you talked about, you found value in being the chief of morale and helping other guys win, but what, you still have to play. You still played a lot for that Red Sox team. What gave you the comfort of when you're in the field, this is a team that's competing for the playoff, competing for the World Series. Like, what at that point in your life, at age 31, finally gave you the comfort to go out there and have success?
Because that was what I was used to. I told you, like in high school, I was used to winning. I was used to having expectation every year. It wasn't just like, oh, okay, I hope we go to the playoffs. Like, no, it's to win a championship. And like, I just fed off that energy. I loved it. I loved the fact that there's an expectation every time you go to the park. Like, these people are fans. They want to win. They expect the best, almost to the point of they think winning's easy. I always said, like, you guys think this is easy. It's not easy to win at anything. You get spoiled. That and they let me be myself. They let me be myself. And I'll remember how good that made me feel. Like, they weren't worried about, oh, you got to wear a uniform like this. You got to look like this. We want to win and make money. Maybe not in that order. I don't know. But that's what it was about. And it didn't matter how it got done. It takes what it takes. And I loved and I appreciate that. And I appreciate it so much that I was able to show up as my best self more times than not. And then I started to understand how important that is to just feel good going somewhere, showing up to work, feeling good.
The Sox also let you join the ranks of a few times of position player pitching. And I was looking at old scouting reports. They had you up to 95 off the bump in high school. What's the, is there any desire to kind of let it loose when you're the position player pitching, or is it just Lob City the whole time?
My shoulder hurts right now when you said that. I just felt it. I felt an ache. Got to have more respect for pitchers because, man, it's not easy. Just throw a strike. And being too old to, like, Adam Jones in the big leagues, that's scary, man. I got to throw this ball or play to this big leaguer. I let it go. And that's probably why I let it go a couple times. I think it was, I don't know, might have been one time it was the Orioles. I don't know. I think I hit 90 or 91. Okay. And again, my shoulder feel like it's on the ground to this day. Feel like it's dragging on the ground. I go back and I look at my mechanics and I'm like, holy cow. No wonder, like, my landing foot's already in the ground. My shoulder's still back down my body. But, again, what a great experience. I'll never forget the first pitch I threw was high, it was high and it goes to the backstop, and the little crowd that was still remained at that game, because the first one was a blowout. The other one was a tie ball game I pitched in where they go crazy, and it's typical, like, Fenway, Fenway fashion. Love it.
In your time in the Red Sox, it was the most extended time you got in the big leagues, and the most, really, in your career, the most extended time in one place. You lived, you look back at your playing career, a lot of different cities, five organizations in 4 years at one time. When you're in a place for a long time, and you shuffled to Pawtucket a little bit in some of those seasons, but What is the workplace relationship? You obviously have your teammates, you have the coaching staff and stuff like that, but like reading an article in The Athletic recently, going to be on the Sox broadcast team this year, great relationship with the radio voice of the Red Sox, Joe Castiglione, if I have that correctly. But when you're, what are the relationships like with team employees and people who work around that? Like when you're there for a while, like how many, we don't think of baseball as like your typical office workplace where you've got the HR team and the accounting team and stuff like that. But how do you get to make relationships with people? I mean, clearly you have, but the relationships with people associated with the team who are not just your teammates, like is that kind of a freeing thing to do, to actually like feel like you're in a workspace versus just a mercenary for hire at AAA where you're staying for 3 months?
Yes, that was the best part. That was the best part of, it's not a workspace. Like this is family. That's what it felt like. This is family. Even to the point of, you know, what the Red Sox did, especially back then, really, 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 really well, is they made your family feel good as well. Like to the point where my daughter, they love this place. They kept, even when I wasn't there, like, damn, why don't you call it Red Sox? Try to get a job with the Red Sox. They just loved it so much, because it's kind of like Maya Angelou quote, like people don't remember, what you said. They remember how you made them feel. And they did it. They still do a great job making you feel good. Simplifying it for you. When I say simplifying it, the more that you can just focus on playing baseball, best chance you're going to give yourself. That's the key to consistency. That's the key to anything you do, like simplifying. And they do a good job of helping guys do that, because they, they take family.
How many dogs do you have?
Two dogs. Actually, this Wally, the Boston Terrier, that is named after the Green Monster. Boston Terrier named Wally.
Oh, love
Boston
that.
Terrier. So, but yeah, the Red Sox, they dear place in my heart. Love, not the fans, but everyone, the field, just the clubbies, the parking, people, like everyone. We're all in this together. And everyone knows, the history of the Sox. They know like the importance of the Sox. They can tell you things that happened 20 years ago. It's amazing. It always amazes me just talking to different people and, the history lesson you continue to get.
We're kind of bumping up on time, but I wanted to add, you get you go from the Red Sox to the Yankees. The Yankees claim you on waivers, kind of a weird jump there. And you mentioned the Sox just kind of letting you be yourself and play. You get to the Yankees, and the Yankees have old history and certain rules. And do I have this right? The Yankees rule, you had to cut your dreadlocks?
Cut my locks. I just got a fresh twist up. It's feeling good. And get to the field, they're like, so that's the captain. Send a message to the captain. The captain said, clean it up. So what do you do?
The captain's orders?
The captain says, clean it up. The captain says, clean it up. What do? You clean it up. Yankees are a bad word in my house. We don't say the Yankees too much. It's awesome to put on the pinstripes and put on, like, man, again, historic. If I had to choose, I like the blue collar lunch pail, hard hat. Let's go. I'm Carhartt guy. Okay. Carhartt. But if you got to be Hugo Boss, you got to be Hugo Boss. And I'm glad I got to experience that. Man, it was just such a bad, I left my family. Not only did I leave my family, but now I'm playing against the enemy of my family. I'm over there.
Your first game with the Yankees against the Red Sox.
First game with the Red Sox. If you didn't know any better, they would have thought like I was still playing with the Red Sox. I got four at bats. It might have been three strikeouts. If you blinked, you would have missed me in the pinstripes. It was not the best time of baseball for me.
Well, professional sports are the only place where you can work against your employer. You know, one day you're employed by someone one day, and the next day you're trying to make life worse for that same employer. It goes into the mental dynamic of that is, it's something you don't encounter in any other place in life. And it's an interesting dynamic there. But, you know, like I said, we're bumping up on time. You play out the 2013 season with the Cubs, put up, you know, in 25 games in the Cubs, you put up some high point numbers in your career. You hang it up. You have talked about life after baseball pretty extensively. How big a hole was that lack of comp? You talked about wanting to win and that being a main driver. How big a hole was that lack of competition in your life? And how do you advise, you know, you filled that by working for the Cubs and doing different things. How do you advise guys who are coming out of baseball, coming out of 10, 15 year professional baseball careers? Some guys who, if you didn't go to college, is literally all you know as an adult. How do you advise guys transition out of baseball and find different outlets to fill that competition?
That's tough, man. I got really, 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 really lucky to be able to go and transition and stay in the game of baseball and have the opportunity to learn new skills. But I would first say, start doing it before you get out of the game, before it gets to that point. When I say start doing it, just start finding different passions outside of baseball. Like, what do you like to do? Start tapping in with people that, do those things. And, you know, it's not necessarily you don't have to, like, do it full time, but just start creating those relationships, creating that network before it's, like, so it's done. Then you're like, oh, what am I doing? So do that first. Start thinking about what else you like doing, and it may be in baseball, it may not be. And the good news is that there's so many more opportunities in the game of baseball now, at the professional level, all the way down to the youth level. Find a way to tap into that. I know that was probably the hardest thing about my last year, knowing it. I knew I was coming to the end, but it's like I spent most of that season, most of those, you know, the season, like thinking about, okay, I got a family. What am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do after baseball? Never would I have said I'm going to be doing mental skills. Like, I probably would have laughed. But, the more I thought about it, I'm like, this makes sense. All the failure, all the, like, I'm talking about journey or 10 years in the minor leagues, to be able to use my lived experience to help someone else, to impact someone else, to expedite their process, to fulfill their dream, and then understanding also like the business side of like, man, you're going to not be a baseball player longer than you are going to be one. So how can we maximize this time right now? That's all you got right now in the moment. And, but to answer your question, there's no blueprint for that. Tap in, find your purpose, man. What is my purpose? What is my purpose here on this earth? For me, man, it was so, man, talk about a journey. So tough, man. When all you spend most of your life, like, how do I hit this slider? And I think the competition, leaving the comp, that's the hardest thing. And so I found yoga. And then I made, you know, yoga was my competition. And I started to understand I'm competing against myself. And this is something I can compete in for the rest of my life because there's no destination. You don't get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm the best yogi. I'm the best. I can do it. So, that's one of the things that, fulfilled my competitive juices. I love learning new things. I love new sport, tennis, and all kind of other things I try to tap into. But yeah, start to kind of go through these processes earlier, better. Network, tap into your network, continue to tap into your network while you're playing. So while you're playing, your network, that's your greatest currency. I was 18. I'm like, oh, whatever. I don't think about that. Play baseball the rest of my life. I'll make all this money. You know, you ain't thinking about any of this stuff, right? But no, your network, your people, your connection.
It's been kind of a theme of this show, especially guys signed out of high school, is like find a life for yourself outside of baseball while you're playing baseball. You know, career can be a focus, but you that is literally a theme of anything. Like you can't, if you just have this one singular purpose, if that singular purpose is gone, you're in trouble. So
absolutely. That was Joe Madden. Joe Madden was good. Like, I think he was the only person that could come in and kind of do the things that he did. And he was big on like, man, if you like, he even had a week, he got a Legion week and he locked the clubhouse. He's like, no one can come until like 6 o'clock for the game. And yeah, it was like 2016 and winning the World Series. But these are the only things like he probably could come in and do. And he's like, man, I don't want you at the field all day. I don't want, like, we're not doing eyewash. We're going to come in, we're going to do what we got to do. We're going to do it with intention and we're going to get out of here. I want to encourage guys to have a life outside of the game. Encourage guys to travel with their family. Encourage guys to hang out on the road. And this is what good teams do. It was the first time of like hearing these type of things. Like actually, like, I want you guys to do this. Like, get out of here. Because I came up in a different era. Like, more is more. And, you know, it's a lot of eyewash. So it was refreshing to see the Joe Maddens, or the Joe Madden.
The only one. I got a quick rapid fire for you, and then I'll let you get out of here.
All right, let's do it.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
That is Durham Bulls.
I haven't totaled all these up, but I'm pretty sure that one has the most got wins it. Or most acknowledgement of guys on the show. Favorite big league ballpark? I feel like
Fenway Park.
I could have guessed that one. Best pitcher you ever faced?
Man, so many. Let's say Clayton Kershaw, CeCe Sabathia, David Price. No. One.
All lefties.
Yeah, lefties, left-handed specialists. And then, you know, they just happen to be number one starters. And a couple of them were Hall of Famers. But I'll just say Clayton Kershaw.
That's a good one to pick. Best food city in the big leagues?
Best food city? Toronto.
Oh, interesting.
Best sushi I ever had in my life. It was, you know, the way he cut the sushi, and I guess they said that Ichiro signed off on it too, so then you know it's good. Because Ichiro loved it, but it's like you just put it on your tongue and it just melt in your mouth. It was unbelievable.
Man, it's we're recording this around lunchtime, so that sounds great. Last one I got for you. Everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
First year going from Delmarva, Eastern Shore to Savannah, Georgia, and literally about an hour into the trip, AC goes, no AC. So there ain't no like, oh, we're gonna call, get a new butt. No, we're the show goes on. So literally guys are in this boxers riding down there because it's hot as heck, going to Savannah, Georgia, one of the hottest places I've ever been. Get there 18-hour ride. You get there like 11 in the afternoon and go get them. Go hit your slider. Let's go.
That is the minor leagues. Where can folks follow you and check out what you're doing with the Red Sox this year?
Nesson. Go to that Nesson. And apparently there's Nesson. There's Nesson Plus. But yeah, definitely go check that out. I'm looking forward to tapping into the media game, talking baseball. Talking Sox and not having to hit a slider.
That's the move. Looking forward to hearing more from you. Darnell McDonald, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom the Farm.
Oh, keep up the good work. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. And that's it for today's episode with Darnell McDonald. Big thanks to him for stopping by. Everyone go check out his work this season, calling Red Sox baseball for Nesson. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Episodes will drop every 2 weeks on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.